What advice would you give an aspiring investor that's maybe 6 to 12 months behind you?
Yeah, so 12 months behind me, you know, I was just getting in on some small multifamilies. And I do think that's a great place to start. I think get into multifamily, get a taste for it. You know, maybe you raise a little bit of money, you take something down. I think you got to build some credibility first and just build some experience. So that would be my advice, would be to start looking for some of those smaller multifamilies. You know, get a couple of money partners, get in on one of those, maybe manage it yourself, maybe get a property management company. You get a property management company, you're already building your team. And all that just builds confidence as well, not just credibility, but you're going to build your own confidence.
Welcome to the Diary of an Apartment Investor podcast with your host, Brian Briscoe. In this podcast, we bring some of the top professionals in the apartment investing field to discuss various aspects of the apartment investing journey with the sole purpose of educating listeners to make wise investment decisions. The Diary of an Apartment Investor podcast is sponsored by Four Oaks Capital, bringing you high yield returns through apartment complex investing. This is journal entry number 122 and part of our first deal series. Today I bring Lee Yoder back on the podcast. He was the aspiring investor in episode number 60 with Abel Pacheco, and he's going to talk about how he closed on a 45-unit syndication worth about $2.1 million in Dayton, Ohio. So now, enjoy the show. Welcome to the Diary of an Apartment Investor podcast. I'm your host, Brian Briscoe with Four Oaks Capital. Very, very excited for today's show. It's another one of our first deal series episodes, and we have Lee Yoder on the line. First question for you, Lee, out of the gate. But let's go back to that previous episode where you're able to ask some questions to Abel. Can you tell us some of the things that you learned from that episode and how are you able to basically put it in practice?
Yeah, absolutely. That was, you know, great being on that episode with you and with Abel Pacheco. Thanks for having me back, Brian. Learn a lot from Abel and have sense from he and from you, Brian. You know, I'm kind of, you know, a couple years behind you guys. And so, yeah, I remember asking Abel, you know, a couple things. Like, I was at the time, you know, I had bought a couple small apartment buildings, just did those with like family and friends. So I was really looking to level up and do my first true apartment syndication. And that's what we're going to get into today. So I was asking Abel, like, about how to build my team, how to attract investors, because that was, you know, going to be something new to me. I took down three small apartment buildings, you know, like basically by myself, you know, just with some close money. So Abel had some good advice of just like looking at myself and what were my strengths and what were my weaknesses. So what would I be looking for in a partner? I kind of had a guy in mind at the time that I was already talking to. And that relationship was a guy that I'd worked with back in the corporate space. That relationship has blossomed, and he did become my partner. So I took some of what Abel had guided me and advised me along those lines of like making sure this guy was a good partner for me, because it's a big deal, right? You know, bringing somebody in, I mean, they say it's like a marriage for a reason, because you know, you're really married to them in that business. So took some advice there, and then Abel had some really good advice on just how to position yourself as somebody that others would want to invest with. You know, just making sure you're very trustworthy, you have a good track record, you do what you say you're going to do, and kind of position yourself that way to people that might be interested in investing in multifamily, so then they think about doing it with you. Yeah. So we've tried to do some things that, frankly, that's still something I've got to do a lot of work on, Brian.
You know, everybody's still working on that. You know, everybody's trying to position themselves better and attract more investors, you know, so, you know, it's always a work in progress. And, you know, every time you think you're at a good spot, you get a rude awakening, but, it seems to be a story of my life. But so incidentally, for listeners, you know, I'll bring that episode to the top of the queue. So if you're listening to this one, that the next episode in the stack should be the episode with Lee and Abel. So go ahead, give it a listen. Remind yourself of all the wonderful things that happened in that episode. Now, one thing that I appreciate about this apartment investing space is so many people that are willing to give back, willing to answer questions like that. And Lee, you also have a podcast and you're able to bring professionals on a lot as well. How has that helped you?
Oh, that's helped me a ton, Brian. I mean, I did that podcast because, like you, I'm really passionate about real estate. I like talking about it. I love teaching others about it, because I think it's just like this kind of hidden thing that you know, most people just grow up, they don't know about. And I mean, I certainly didn't. And then once you kind of get turned onto it, it's like this, why didn't I know about this before? Like, this is like magic going away. I mean, I don't want to over, you know, romanticize it, but like, this is like a no-brainer. Like, why wouldn't I invest in this? Why wouldn't I do this? Why wouldn't everybody do this? Yeah. And so you want to just tell more people about it. So I love doing the podcast, but yeah, I mean, selfishly, it's been incredible having guys like you on, Brian, you know, people that frankly are like, you know, way ahead of me. And like, I just feel like I don't have enough going on to like command an hour of your time, but because I have a podcast and like, because it, you know, it gives you a chance to come on and talk and kind of market yourself. Like, I've been able to have some awesome guests on that I've learned a ton from. So I know my listeners are, because the guests that I have on just have a lot of experience, just really went after it. But at the same time, you know, guys like you, like, are relatable. So people can listen to that and go, I mean, Ryan didn't seem to do anything too crazy. Like, Marine, you know, moved around and was like, hey, you know, I see house prices go on up and down. I want to get in this a little bit. So, I'm going to jump in here. And so, yeah, having guys on like that, I've learned a ton from. I think my listeners have as well. So,
yeah, you know, I've noticed the same thing with my podcast. I've brought a lot of heavy hitters on there, and you know, you're able to learn a whole bunch. And I think what you said is absolutely true. You know, I can't call someone who has, you know, 10,000 units under their belt and say, hey, do you have an hour that I can pick your brain? Right. You know, but yep. If I say, hey, can you come on a podcast for an hour? That's exactly what happens, is I can sit and ask whatever question I want and get the answer. And quite frankly, on a lot of the Ask the Expert episodes, you know, when the aspiring investor is asking questions, you know, I'm like, oh yeah, that's a good idea. You know, take notes. yep. All right. So let's get back to you. We haven't talked a lot about your background and history yet. So let's talk about your background and history, and we'll jump right into the deal then.
Yeah, absolutely. So try to give you the quick version, but I'm a physical therapist by trade. So I had to go to grad school and all that, come out finally as a physical therapist. You know, I was doing the outpatient clinic thing, and we're, you know, kind of open later. And my wife and I were starting a young family, so I didn't like having to work till 7:30, you know, a few nights a week. So kind of started looking into doing home health physical therapy, where I drive to people's homes and treat mostly older people that, you know, can't get out of their home to get into the outpatient clinic. And the schedule of that was awesome. I mean, my wife loved it. Like I said, we were starting a young family. So I got to make my own schedule. Frankly, I was like probably barely working 40 hours a week and making like plenty of money for our lifestyle. The problem was, I mean, so, you know, just some people would be like, dude, just do that for the rest of your life. Yeah, but
that's the life, right?
Yeah, right. I mean, and in a way it was, but just God created me to want something different, because to me it was like so boring. I mean, I felt like I was like working at a factory, like putting nuts and bolts together. Just the same thing every day. It just wasn't difficult. It wasn't challenging. It wasn't changing. So and the whole time, Brian, I'm like listening to podcasts like yours and starting to get kind of an itch to do something different. Although I wasn't turned on to real estate yet. So anyway, that company that I was with asked me to come in and be the clinical director. So I jumped at that opportunity. Mm-hmm. And over the next like 6 months, I transitioned from doing all physical therapy to doing half to doing none. And I was in the office. So now I'm really, you know, really basically have a corporate job. I was kind of like a director of operations slash clinical director. So I was managing, you know, 75 therapists between Cincinnati, Columbus, and Dayton, Ohio, traveling, doing all this stuff, doing sales. And now I'm like the opposite. So now I've got kind of that corporate job that's not really conducive to raising a family, especially with young kids. My wife's, you know, staying home. So she's like in it all the time and like ready for someone to come home, you know, give her. And I want to be home. Like when you have young kids, you know, you want to be home with them. And I was at work.
They're only young once. And that's, I know. I mean, they grow so fast. So
absolutely. Yeah. And my wife and I were always, you know, other couples pouring that into us. So I knew that. And so my job was fun and exciting and challenging. It's like what I wanted out of my job while I was there. I was enjoying it, but I just didn't enjoy the amount of time I had to put in and just the effort and energy too, because even when I was home, it was kind of like I still had to kind of be on, you know? Yeah. So I just started thinking like, okay, well, what else is there? Like, I feel like I've had both extremes, like a great job for the family, but I'm bored out of my mind and not fulfilled. And then a job where I'm fulfilled and challenged, but it's not good for my family. And so about then, a buddy of mine that I worked with, that I was building this division with, handed me a book, and it was a real estate book. And it wasn't that good a one, but like, it kind of got me down that rabbit hole. I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, you know, just go down that. And I'm like, okay, I think this might be my ticket. And I eventually decided, what if I left? And I'll say this too, because I feel like this is relevant to today with so many people working at home. A buddy of mine who was in real estate full-time, he was just doing small rentals and managing themselves. He said, Lee, could you do your job from home? Could you get more flexibility with your job? And for me, the answer was no. And I just say that, I think it's relevant today, Brian, because so many people are working from home now that never have before, right? And it does kind of give you some flexibility. So when he said that, I said, no, I can't do my job like that. But then I started to think, well, but what if I went back to home health physical therapy? Okay. And I have all this flexibility and I'm bored but then I add in real estate. So that's what I did. And I did that in the fall of 2016. So about 4.5 years ago, and about a year of just doing that work, listening to podcasts, you know, studying up and stuff like that. I started, you know, getting ready for physical or getting ready for real estate. Then I flipped the house, flipped the duplex, and I was like doing one deal a year. And then in the fall of 2019, kind of the summer leading up to that, I bought my first small multifamily. I bought a 16 unit. About a month and a half later, I bought an 8 unit. About a month and a half later, I bought a 10 unit. Nice. And then I took like the next year into the fall of 2020, basically just bringing those properties around. I was looking for others at the time that whole year, but I just couldn't find anything that made sense. And then I've actually sold off a couple of those to give me like a big cushion, a big runway that pays my family and I, like our expenses for the next few years.
Yep.
I was able to just to have enough equity in those properties, did well enough. We added a ton of value, put a ton of work into them. And so I've got this big cushion now. So I actually left my physical therapy job in December of 2020 and jumped into real estate full time. And then we finally, the deal we're going to talk about today was my first true apartment syndication that we just closed in February.
Nice. And yeah, I mean, having done a lot before, you know, I asked you prior to the show a couple of things about it, you know, having that experience in hand probably helped you out significantly in several areas. And I think the loan is definitely one, but we'll talk about that in a second. But, you know, a couple of things that definitely resonate. I mean, you're able to basically hustle, you know, and turn your side hustle into something that was producing income. And, you know, now you have a lot more flexibility. You have that runway. That's something that I think a lot of people should listen to. You know, and I've basically done the same thing. I've been active duty for the last 20 years. I started, you know, trying to find my first apartment building 3 years ago. And all the money that I've earned from that business has done the same thing for me. It's created a runway. So, yeah. You know, 127 days from now, when I actually retire, you know, I'll be able to have that runway to be able to, you know, pay all the bills for a year or two and continue to build the business, you know. So
yep.
definitely something that I think a lot of people should aspire to. Some people are able to quit their full-time job earlier, some people have to wait a little later, but it's possible to do both.
Yes.
And I think you're a good example of how to do that. So yeah, let's start talking about the deal. You talked about, you know, your business partner being your former coworker. So let's talk about how you guys, first of all, found the first deal or this 45 unit. And my understanding, 28 unit and 2 8 plexes. Is that it up?
29. Yep.
29 and 2 8 plexes. Yep. Okay.
Yep.
All right.
Yeah. So we found that one just through a friend that's that another investor in Dayton, Ohio, a guy that I think I first met him, Brian, on Bigger Pockets. And we just kind of hit it off. We ended up talking on the phone, just like kind of sharing notes, just, hey, you know, we're both investors, you know, in Dayton and like, you know, we should just work together. And I had him on my podcast and just really got to like the guy. And he has about 175 doors himself in Dayton. And they manage them themselves. He does some other stuff too, but he's just very plugged into the market. And then just a couple months ago, he became a broker. So he wanted to get his broker's license. So he joined a brokerage there in Dayton and kind of does his own thing. He has access to a lot of deals and he'll take them down himself, but he just likes the really, really heavy value add. Mm-hmm. And he came and someone brought this deal to him, this 45 units, where it just didn't have enough meat on the bone for him. He likes to buy really distressed properties. So, you know, knowing me and kind of what we were looking for, he called me up and said, hey, I think I got the type of property that you're looking for. He told me a little bit about it. And I said, yeah, I think that it's definitely what we're looking for. And so, you know, we come out and look at it and decided it was. So yeah, I just found it through a broker, but more of like another investor, Brian. Honestly, I think of him more as an investor and it was just an investment that he just didn't want to take down himself because it's not his type of product that he likes.
Well, I think there's a couple of key points there. You know, number one, you know, you found him on Bigger Pockets and you reached out to him, you know, so you took some action and then you spent some time developing the relationship.
Right.
And yep. I think that's a part that a lot of people skip over. You know, a lot of people just, you know, hey, cold call brokers and wonder why they're not getting sent deals after, you know, 1 3-minute phone call. Right. So
right.
I think the route you went is the better route for the long term. You know, it may not be, you know, as simple and quick as potentially, hey, I'm going to call a dozen brokers and maybe I, you know, spend an hour worth of work and start getting some deals across my desk. But yeah, you developed a relationship and that relationship yep. turned into something that he knew what you were looking for. And when he found something that fits your criteria, he picked up the phone and called you, you know, and just like, hey, Lee, I got this deal. What do you think? Right.
Yep.
And absolutely. My understanding is you guys were the only ones in the deal from the beginning, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a deal that the sellers had marketed like a year before. I'd seen it before. Mm-hmm. And just kind of wasn't ready to take that down at the time. But they got it under contract. And it was one of those that, like, you know, I think it's one of those where the buyer that had it under contract was like looking to just get it under contract and then kind of beat the sellers up as they went mm-hmm. along and retrade and stuff. And they got right down to the closing, like very close to closing, and really didn't have their finances together. Mm-hmm. And they weren't able to close on it. So the sellers being burned did not want to list it again.
Yeah.
So it was not listed. They didn't want it listed, and they really wanted to vet the potential buyer mm-hmm. and only work with one buyer, and that ended up being us.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and sellers, there's two different competing interests with a lot of sellers. Obviously they want to maximize their profit, but they also mm-hmm. want to minimize the pain.
Absolutely.
You know? And if you can yes. come forth with an offer that does both, you know, if you're a very credible, you have all the resources, you have everything in place to be a viable buyer, you know, you can present an offer that, you know, puts a dollar amount in front of them that they're okay with. But if you can also give them a way to minimize the pain and
yes.
the stress of the transaction, a lot of times that'll win the deal.
Yeah. And just giving them the confidence that you're not going to waste 2 months mm-hmm. of your time
yeah.
and then me not close. Like that's, mm-hmm. I mean, we were able to say on that one, and we still are. And I hope we always can, like, whenever I've gotten a property under contract, I've closed every time. And so we told them that, like, there's no way we're not going to close. Yep. You know, we're not big into retrading, and this is going to close. And I hope we're able to continue that, because yep. that it means a lot to them to know that, all right, if we go down this road with you, it's not going to be a big waste of time, because it was the first time, yep. you know, for them. And yeah, they didn't want to do that again.
Interestingly, we dropped out of one contract on a 40 unit property. And then a year later, we ended up buying it, you know, so there were a lot of financial issues on this particular property. We were willing to stay in, the sellers weren't, but their occupancy yeah. went from 90% to 75% during the due diligence period, you know? So, you know, there's not a whole lot that you can do with that as a buyer. Right. You're like, hey, I was going to get a Freddy. No, I can't. So,
right. The deal totally changed then.
Yeah. But a year later, you know, they fixed everything. Their occupancy was up high for several months, even throughout COVID. And then, you know, we jumped back on it. Downside for us is I think we paid, you know, 15% more than our original mm-hmm. contract price. But, you know, it is what it is. But I think that's absolutely crucial. You know, you want to have that reputation of being the group that can close every time. All right. Yeah, you don't want to go in. You don't want to go in with the reputation of the retraders. You know, the guys who always retrade.
Yeah.
The brokers are going to get to know you. And yep. if you're the guy that retrades every time, when they come to the seller with the offer, they're going to like, hey, be prepared for a retrade with these guys.
Right.
So let's talk about the business plan going in, and then we can hit any challenges you guys had during closing.
Sure. So typically, Brian, like in this market, I mean, we're looking for some pretty heavy value adds, because mm-hmm. it just seems like sometimes that's the best way to get a deal. You know, mm-hmm. anything that's closer to turnkey, anything that's already, you know, very well stabilized is just very expensive. But with this one, I think it's just because they wanted an ease of sale, to your point. Like, yeah, we want a good price, but like we just want to be able to close, and we want an easy sale process. So we got a good deal on it, even though it really was stabilized. High occupancy, you know, 95% occupancy. They had taken care of all the CapEx. All three buildings had new roofs. All three buildings had all new windows. All three buildings are all brick. So those three things right there, I just love. And there's you know, slope yeah. shingle roofs. So just love that product. They're on the west side of Dayton, which is not the good side of Dayton. But the 29 unit building, the biggest one, is really more like downtown. I mean, it's just west of downtown, but it's like an extension of downtown in a nice little pocket, a nice area. And so really it was just a matter of coming in, and the couple that owned it, the guy was local, but he wasn't involved really at all. He wasn't active. The lady partner, she lived in Kansas City and was very involved. I mean, she had a lady that was working using one of the studios as an office, actually, that we've already converted, and having her work part time. But I mean, she knew every single resident, knew everything about them, like just very involved. So our plan was really more of a management play, and the value add in that way of like managing more professionally. And so not having residents that frequently were getting behind on rent. I mean, she had, I think either five or six, I think it was six residents that were over $1,000 behind on rent.
Wow.
And a couple up around 3,000. And she was working with them, but like working with them on getting some of the government assistance, and she's been successful, and that's great. I think that's awesome to get that, but like, you still got to pay until yeah. we're able to get that, you know? And she just, just didn't handle, you know, really manage it professionally, and just missing out on some calls. But they were doing rubs, doing really well with that. So yeah, really just a management, increasing rent slowly, kind of running the building more professionally. That was the value add on this property.
Nice. Yeah. And I mean, a lot of solo managers, they do that. They get to know their yeah. tenants really well. And, you know, it's one of those fine lines that, you know, once you have a good relationship with tenants, you know, it's really easy for them to talk you into, you tell them a sob story and okay, yeah, you know, maybe you can skip rent this month, but yeah. end of the day, you got to run it like a business, you know, especially yeah. if you're bringing other investors in.
Exactly.
You know, your number one priority is to the investors. You know, obviously you got to treat the tenants well, you know, I'm not saying that, but you got to run it like a business. And when you purchase something from somebody who's not running it like a business, there's a lot of little efficiencies you can pick up there.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's talk about the loan really quickly, and then uh-huh. and then we can talk about, you know, other issues with closing that you may have encountered.
Sure. The loan, we just got through a small bank. This just wasn't quite a big enough deal, Brian, to get like agency debt, even yep. the small balance Freddie. It just wasn't quite big enough. Also, the properties, the building's not being contiguous. That throws a wrench into it. So we just went to a local credit union. They only loan in like a, you know, this general area. Mm-hmm. And so they like properties like this. And got a really nice, you know, 25-year AM, five-year fixed at 3.75% interest, just kind of a simple basic loan, just from a small credit union. Yeah, there were some issues getting that. You know, you kind of want to get into that. I mean, for us, it was just that this was a big step up for us, and that's how the bank saw it. You know, we did have some experience, but the experience I had, the biggest purchase price up to this point was $350,000. Because yeah. we bought some cheap, you know, even our 16 unit, that's what we paid for the 16 unit, was $350. And because it was just a very cheap property and in a rural area. So this was a big step up for us. So the bank, you know, felt like they were taking a little bit of a leap of faith with us. So that was some of the challenge of getting, because we worked with a mortgage broker that I've worked with in the past, and they had no trouble getting us loans on these real small multifamilies. Yeah. And then we were just doing joint ventures where everybody was signing on the loan. But getting a loan for a you know, much bigger property, you know, $1.68 million loan now instead of, you know, just a couple $100,000 loan. And then yeah. bringing limited partners on that are not signing on the loan. That's, you know, that's the thing. My partner and I kept 50% of the equity, but now only 50% is signing on the loan versus 100% in the ones before. So that was definitely more challenging to get banks to want to lend to us on this.
Yeah. You know, that's banks tend to be the gatekeepers on this. I mean, almost as much or more than the brokers a lot of times, because you know, if they're lending, you know, $1.6 million in this case, you know, they're going to double and triple check, you know, what the property looks like and what the syndication group looks like.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have to meet their standards to be able to make it in this business. But yep. one good thing you had going for you is at least you had some commercial loan experience.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And that's typically something that a lot of banks are looking for once you get into that seven-figure loan amount, is they want somebody with experience. You know, a lot of people can get into a, you know, $300,000 loan based off their income only.
Absolutely.
And buy a commercial property. But, yep. you know, you have to have that experience to start getting into the bigger properties. And I think the way you did it, you know, you're just taking a step up. You know, you went from, you know, roughly 40 total units of multifamily to 45 altogether. Mm-hmm. And it's a step up instead of, you know, jumping into a whole new field. But
yeah.
All right. So what hitches, what lessons learned did you have during closing and getting this ball across the goal line, so to speak?
Well, this was our first syndication, like I said. So, you know, working with syndication attorneys, getting all that paperwork. I mean, that was a lot because we were working with some of the same investors that had partnered with me on the previous deals, some new ones. But I think maybe everybody but one, this was their first syndication that they'd invested in. So it was new for them and it was new for me. So learning all the syndication, they sent me three documents and it was a total of 124 pages. I read through all that to really make sure I understood it, because I didn't like deeply understand it. I didn't know, hey, what if somebody wants to get out? Like, what if they want to sell their share? I didn't know how that went. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when an investor's like, hey, like, I understand, like, you're telling me this is like a 5 to 7 year commitment, but like, what if after 2 years, what if, right? And I'm, I don't know, you know, but I need to know that, you know, like as the sponsor, it's like, I want to be able to answer every question or at least come close. I mean, sure. You know, we still have the attorneys, like you get them, it's part of the deal. Like you get them for 6 months. And so, hey, we can go ask them questions, but like, if I'm going to instill confidence in the limited partners, I need to know almost every answer, you know? So reading through those, it really did help, but it was just a learning experience for me. And it was a lot to get through. I mean, you can't just collect the money right away. You got to get everybody to sign this, you know, getting people to sign different documents, getting it out to them. We put out a Zoom video to walk through the documents with them. Mm-hmm. So there was, you know, there's a lot more that went into this than the other ones. The other ones, it was like, I went to a couple family members that were like, Lee, I'm betting on you, not the deal. So, you know, here's the money. Yeah. Right. And they're willing to sign on the loan. We just take it down. And there's something to be said for that, but like, we want to go a little bit bigger, be a little more professional. And so there was a big learning curve with all that.
Yeah. You know, and once you do a syndication and people are not signing on the loan, you know, all of a sudden it starts looking and feeling like you're selling securities and the SEC gets mm-hmm. involved and, mm-hmm. you know, it raises it to a different level, you know? Yeah. So if you're at a point where you're doing things with everybody signing on the loan, you can get away with a little bit more, you know, no PPM, you may not need an attorney. You should have an operating agreement that explains all that stuff.
Right. But,
you know, as soon as you start syndicating, that kind of raises the stakes a little bit where now you need that syndication attorney and, you know, you're actually exposing yourself to a lot of risk if you don't. All right. So let's talk briefly about, you know, how it's gone since you guys purchased it. And I think it's been about a month now, right?
Yeah, just a little bit over a month. So we did about 2 weeks ago, we collected, we got our first report from the property management company. So we collected on the 1st of March and March 10th, we get our first report and it went really well. I mean, that's always like, you know, you're nervous, like, hey, we know what the physical occupancy is going in, but what's the economic occupancy going to be like, right? I mean, we know what the sellers told us, but like, you just never know until rent actually comes in, so that you're kind of holding your breath until you're actually able to collect rent that first month. But it went really well. We're working with a new property management company. We were pretty happy with our old one. I would still recommend our old property management company people, but we end up meeting some guys that are investors and they bought a property management company and are really looking to scale. It just felt like they were on the same trajectory as us. And they're just, they're hustlers. They're getting started. They're very involved in the business. It just felt like they were going to give us another level of like, you know, seeing the property as an investment because they're investors and really get into it. And we've been really happy with them so far. Like I mentioned, the previous owners, they had a part-time manager that used one of the studios as an office. Yeah. That's already been turned into a unit. They're working on getting that rented out right now. They're doing some showings. We had one vacancy that's already been filled. They've got a couple, I mentioned, you know, the previous owner was letting some people not pay, even though they had jobs, stuff like that. And so we've kind of come in and said, you know, no, if you don't pay, you're going to leave. And we've had a couple of people just kind of like a mutual agreement. Well, I'll tell you one nice thing, Brian, was she had a lot of people on month-to-month leases. Mm-hmm. And when you come in, that's actually kind of nice because then you got a trial period, right? Like, hey, if you don't work out, it's not a matter of trying to evict you. It's just, we're not going to renew your lease. So we've got two people right now for sure that we're not going to renew their lease. Mm-hmm. And so just kind of let them go. And so we'll have a couple more vacancies. We were planning on having 10% vacancy this first year, which would be 4.5 units. And I don't think we're going to come anywhere close to that because they're doing a good job, but we are going to have some turnover here early on. But yeah, the rent came in really well. Looking at what we're going to be able to pay our investors, we're really excited. We're going to go ahead and pay out right now because we're just going to keep like on the calendar year, like, hey, January, February, March was the first quarter. Yep. We only collected rent one of those months, you know, for March. So we're only going to be able to pay you for 1 month, but we're going to go ahead and pay you just so we can have that touch point and kind of show. Nice. So the cash flow is looking great so far. So we're really excited that we're coming in and just cash flowing right away.
All right. Congratulations. And that single unit, I mean, on a 29, there's no reason you have to have on-site management.
Right.
I mean, it does not support on-site management. So financially, that's a smart move to turn that into a rentable apartment again and put a paying tenant in there because it just doesn't support it. Trip point line in the sand is usually somewhere around 100 units, depending on what metro you're in. Yep. But once you're around the 100 unit mark, you can actually start. You know, it makes financial sense to put that office in there.
Right.
But
right.
Good move on that one. All right. So, you know, a couple of quick questions for you. What's next for you?
Yeah. Next for us, Brian, is just more of the same. We're just really excited to partner with, you know, other investors that have some capital that, that want to maybe diversify the stock market, or, you know, just looking for a different investment, maybe invest for the first time and want to get in on a property like this. And my partner and I are just looking for more properties just like this. We feel like we found a kind of nice niche. We're looking for 20 to 80 unit apartment buildings where we're not competing with kind of some of the big money. So we can get in at a good cap rate and just something we can take down. This one, we just needed 7 investors. You know, probably in the future ones, we're looking for closer to 15 to 20 on each one. But yeah, we're hoping to continue. You know, you and I were talking before, Brian, now that we have closed this, now that we are technically syndicators now, right? And
yeah,
it's going to be so much easier to get a broker's attention to think like, oh, you guys just closed out 45 unit. Why couldn't you close this 48 unit? Why couldn't you close this 60 unit? And then the bank's the same way. You know, we go to a different bank. Oh, you know, you got a loan on that one. That's going really well. You know, we can kind of show them some numbers. Okay, we'll give you a loan on this next one. So I think we're just hoping we can kind of build up some momentum and continue buying more properties just like this one. Yeah.
Nice. Amazing. All right. So here's my favorite question of the whole thing. Save the best for last. But what advice would you give an aspiring investor that's maybe 6 to 12 months behind you?
Yeah. So 12 months behind me, you know, I was just getting in on some small multifamilies. And I do think that's a great place to start. I mean, the first one I owned was a duplex. So depending, you know, how much you have, how much experience you have, I think get into multifamily, get a taste for it. You know, maybe you raise a little bit of money, you take something down, maybe you manage it yourself, but maybe you get, I managed the duplex myself, but as soon as I got a 16 unit, I didn't want to manage it. I got a property manager right away. But you just start, to your point, Brian, of like, if you say, hey, my end goal, which this is for me, I want to own 100 plus unit apartment buildings. Unless you're going to partner with somebody, like unless, you know, somebody like you, Brian, says, hey, we're looking for another, you know, add another partner, another GP, and, you know, somebody comes in and partner. Unless you're going to do that, I think you got to build some credibility first and just build some experience. So that would be my advice, would be to start looking for some of those smaller multifamilies, you know, get a couple of money partners, get in on one of those, maybe manage it yourself, maybe get a property management company. You get a property management company, you're already building your team. And all that just builds confidence as well, not just credibility, but you're going to build your own confidence. And that's what it was for me. Like once I owned a duplex and I started talking to property management companies, it was like, okay, I'll get the 16 unit. And once I had a property management company that I trusted, that gave me so much confidence because I felt like, well, I'm not the one managing the property anyway. Mm-hmm. All I've got to do is find a good one, buy right, raise the money.
Exactly.
Find the deal, find the money, and then let them take over. And I mean, as long as you find a good one, now you've got to manage the manager. So I think if you start small and start building up those pieces, you build a team, you gain confidence on a small scale, and then you can just scale it from there.
Yeah. Now, I think there's competing, you know, ideologies out there. There's a lot of people that say, if you want to be in the 100 plus unit space, you may as well just start in the 100 plus unit space.
Sure.
And you've given us a good example of the other way to do it, which I think is perfectly viable in a lot of ways. It's, you know, you start with a duplex and then you get the 8 and the 16 and the 20, you know, you put those, you string along a couple of smaller multifamilies together. And then from that, you jump into a, you know, $2.1 million, 45 unit apartment building. And in short order, you can still hit that 100 unit mark. You know, I wouldn't be surprised to hear you, you know, 6 months to a year from now, you know, closing on a 120, 140, you know, maybe a 200 unit apartment building.
Yeah.
You know, going the route you went. So two different routes to get to the same spot. I don't think either's right or either's wrong, but it definitely has worked for you so far. So, you know, good on you and congratulations for your success.
Thank you.
I hope you continue to have success. So
Flashback
to the previous conversation between you and Abel, you know, you're turning into the 5 talent guy, you know, from the,
I hope so.
the New Testament parable, you know,
so that's the goal in life. I mean, certainly in life as well, but yeah,
absolutely.
Apartment building stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the name of Abel's company and his podcast, 5 Talents. So, all right. So how can our listeners learn more about you?
Yeah, well, I'm definitely a kindred soul to Abel. We call ours threefold. That's from a verse in Ecclesiastes. So similar, you know, biblical reference there. But Threefold Real Estate Investing is our company. We've got a website at threefoldrei.com. You can find us there. Like you mentioned before, Brian, I've got the podcast Threefold Real Estate Investing, doing similar thing to you, having some people on to spread their knowledge, their experience, you know, their advice to others. So we're doing that on the podcast. We've got a little ebook that we're really excited about. it's called 5 Steps to Passive Income for the Full-Time Dad. Okay. That's on our website. So you jump on the website, you can get that. Just really excited about that, Brian, because we really believe that real estate is a great way, and you can do it in so many different ways. But even if you just jump in on a deal like the ones you guys have, Brian, you can start to build some passive income that can really open up some opportunities and build in, you know, we kind of talked about having a cushion. Like, it can just do a lot of things for your family. You can put your money to work for you. I think a lot of dads and moms as well, you know, my partner and I are both dads, so we kind of target that niche, but a lot of moms and dads are looking to provide for their family financially, obviously, but they also want to have some time at home. So when you decide, well, like, I want to provide even more, you know, one way to do that is to take a promotion, to try to do more, to try to work more. Well, so you're going to provide more financially, but now you're spending more time away from home. Yeah. So I really believe that if you can save some money, if you can invest that money well, and I think, you know, multifamily real estate is the way to do that. Now you can increase your time or your money without increasing your time. Yeah. Because now your money's working for you. Your money's the one that's providing a passive return. So that's something we're really passionate about. And we love to educate more people about that and maybe partner with people in that way.
Yeah. And really, I mean, the key is to disassociate the amount of money you bring in with the time you spend, you know, and that's what this allows you to do. You can passively invest, and you're going to be earning returns whether you go to work in the morning or not, you know? So,
yep.
All right. Absolutely. Well, hey, thanks so much for coming back on the podcast, you know, adding to the very short but growing list of aspiring investors that have turned into experienced investors. So, you know, congratulations once again. You. And yeah, look forward to a lot more from you in the future.
Yeah. Thanks, Brian.
Thank you for listening to the Diary of an Apartment Investor podcast today, brought to you by Four Oaks Capital. If you'd like to know more about how to invest in apartment buildings or want to be a guest in our show, visit our website at fouroakscapital.com/podcast or email us directly. If you're still listening, you obviously like the show, so pull out your phone, tap subscribe, and leave us a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast app. And we'll see you again next week.